Hi everyone, it's Dina McKay, and I'm back with a brand new episode of Black Tech Unplugged, the podcast that allows Blacks in tech to share their authentic stories with you, the listener. On each episode, the guest talks about how they got into tech, their work in the industry, and lessons they've learned during their journey. You can find full show notes for this episode on blacktechunplugged.com. Let's jump in. Welcome to episode 85 of the pod. On this episode, I'm featuring Gabrielle, or maybe you know her as No Way She Codes, and she is a tech-savvy girly with a passion for coding and content creation. She has a degree in computer science and a knack for breaking down complex tech concepts. Gabby has navigated her way through the ever-evolving landscape of technology, and she's here to share her story with you today. So, on this episode, we discuss why having a community in tech is really, really important, and how Gabby is creating space for women in tech. We discuss tech role transitions because Gabby went from being a technical evangelist to software engineer and is in her current role as a product manager for the MBA. We also get to the nitty-gritty conversation about how to navigate bad managers and how to not let the mediocre management stop your bag or your career. And lastly, she shares the best advice that she's received so far in her time in tech. Gabby's been in her tech journey for over 10 years, so she has a lot of experience and valuable knowledge to share. I'm so excited to share Gabrielle's journey from coding newbie to tech influencer, as well as her insights, experiences, and plenty of laughs along the way. If you want to follow Gabby after hearing her story, her links are in the show notes. I hope you enjoy. Now let's get it. Everyone, I'm back with a brand new episode of Black Tech Unplugged. I have Gabrielle joining the podcast. And Gabrielle, for people who might know you on social media, it's No Way She Codes, but for people who don't know you, can you just give a brief introduction of yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Gabby. I have been in the tech space for about, we're going on like 10, 11 years. It's been a really long time. And I'm just really big on social media around making some type of tech community and just talking about the real things that people don't want to talk about and just trying to make sure I connect with more Black and brown and more women around tech and our issues and things like that. So I'm happy to be here.
Yes, and I'm happy to have you. And actually, let's start with the topic around community because you've been in tech about 10 or 11 years. Community has very much changed in that 10 to 11 years of time in tech. So wanted to start off with when you started in tech, what was community like then versus now?
So to be honest, I think I'm one of the few people who I had very unique experiences, right? So my first job into tech was like, my team was majority women. Not a lot of Black people or brown people, but women. My team, we were like a nationwide team and we were split into regions, but we still worked with other regions, X, Y, Z, and most of the people on the team were women. So that was really like motivating for me. Regardless, I had was actually very community facing. So we would go out to tech conferences. We would go out to schools, to different things and like share the best of what Microsoft had to offer, right? And I love that job. And then you really see in that community, like no matter where you go, it is still white male dominated versus I think the way my life has shifted. And I think that's partially because of the industry, but mostly because of the path that I am choosing for myself and the community and spaces I want to put myself in. My community has changed to more Black and brown people in tech, right? So it's just like the social media pages that I follow, like yours, or the conferences I decide to go to, like Afrotech, things like that, like trying to be more around people who understand what I'm going through, the different challenges I have in this space, X, Y, Z. And I feel like that's also followed me through the different roles that I have, where even if I have switched to a team that was mainly male or mainly white dominated, it was easy for me to find those who are like me to help me navigate through these spaces. So community is always, to me, what you make it and what you find. So I was able to take my community into my own hands and make it what I wanted to be, what I needed it to be.
Love that, because a lot of us don't have that opportunity, especially in tech. So I do got to rewind the tape and ask, how did you get on a team with all women? What was the specific role you were doing?
I'm going to say I got lucky. I was they call it technical evangelist, but now I would be known as a developer advocate. So, you know, we're still coding, still working on engineering solutions and stuff like that, but you're more community facing. You're, you know, building cool demos and going to conferences and being like, hey, you know, my focus was IoT. So it was like, hey, this is what Microsoft is doing in the IoT space, is what it looks like. And, you know, kind of telling a story for consumers or other engineers to take on Microsoft's latest and greatest. Right. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like I got lucky. I'm not even going to lie. Like, I don't think it was a formula to it. I think it's just kind of how the chips fell.
Okay. Yeah. But as a tech evangelist, you basically had to be like a people person. So you had to go talk to people. You had to, basically, you were a little bit of sales, because you have to, like, you're not selling an actual like Microsoft product, but you're selling the company in a way, right? You're kind of trying to attract people to some of the stuff that they were working on at the time.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying by sales, but it was a little less away from sales and more towards the engineering, because everywhere we went was an engineering audience, not like engineering leaders or the corporations kind of thing. It literally was like, you know, when you go to a technical conference like Grace Hopper and someone's like, how you build XYZ, that's, you know, where we were selling the experience. So engineers would be like, oh, I want to put this new technology into my project. There wasn't any necessarily monetary value that we were measuring, more so like we were doing demos, we were running workshops, like more of an educational sell than an actual sell, if that makes sense.
Yes, that makes sense. But what I'm trying to capture is the essence of, it takes a special person to sell anything. Some people can sell something like a pencil, like with like ease, but you have to have a certain personality to have this role. So I just wanted to make sure that people understood that piece. And it sounds like, especially with an all-female team or, you know, all women, you're definitely, you have some like rock stars and sellers on your team in order to make that happen.
I think like a lot of us were, in general, a bit more bubbly, you know, a bit more feminine out there. But we had some male rock stars. I'm not going to take away from them. There were some male rock stars. It's like, wow, that is like, you are really honing into your audience. Now, there are definitely a lot of women who really were setting the tone, you know, making the haters, the doubters, like, well, you can't be as technical, like really proving them wrong. A lot of strong technical women with that bubbly personality that was able to kind of bring it all together. For sure.
Yes. You love to see that. So, okay, that's exciting. So you join, you have that first role, you have a team that is majority women when you first start and get into tech. How do you use that for what you're going towards today?
To be honest, I feel like in that role, I became just a straight software engineer and then transitioned into product. But to be honest, I think what that being a technical evangelist taught me was really how different people absorb information, how different people execute, and how different people learn. Like, and being a product manager, as someone who is, I have to take research, I have to make product decisions, I have to work with different stakeholders, I have to work with, you know, my engineering team. The role of being a technical evangelist definitely helps me to convey information differently depending on who I'm talking to. Same project, but maybe how I explain it to you or explain why this can't work this way or why it will work this way, you know, like being able to really maneuver same product, different audience. And I think that that job really helped with that.
Yes. And you know what? I want to break down technical evangelists a little bit further, just because it could be people who are listening who are interested in a role like that. And I want to make sure that we capture exactly what the role is, what a technical evangelist does, and then also like the technical and soft skills that are needed to be successful in a role like that.
Yeah. So I probably wouldn't find the role technical evangelist anymore. Now they're mainly called developer advocates. And so the skill set you have to have, you still have to be very technical. You have to know how to code. You have to be able to read documentation, implement, teach the documentation, write documentation, just like a software engineer would. However, a lot of times, and this is where the difference was, at least at Microsoft, was developer advocates aren't tied to a product, more so a technology, okay. Right? So you might be a developer advocate for Azure Storage. You could be a developer advocate. Like I said, I was IoT, Internet of Things, developer advocate for the latest and greatest in C#. Now, a lot of times too, as a developer advocate, you have to be technical because you're presenting demos, like your own code, your own projects to engineers so that they can kind of get a sense of how what you're discussing can be used in the real world kind of thing. But then there tends to be personal social aspect where a lot of us are building a blog. A lot of us are on Twitter, XYZ. So when people have questions, they will easily come to your Twitter and be like, hey, I tried this out. What do you think? Like, you're constantly connecting with people. And then what also makes you very unique, that role very unique, is a lot of companies, you tend to also have a connection to the engineering team that relates to your focus, right? So you, even though you're not on the engineering team, you know, you have to connect with them on what are they working on, what's coming out, and what do they want to get out there. And a lot of times, some, not all, especially if they are working on a product that is open source, then a developer advocate will actually put code into that open source project because anybody can, right? And that makes you a little bit deeper and knowledgeable on what's going on. So it's a very weird but fun role that you kind of bring all these different things to be successful. So you got a content because you're people are making videos. There's so many different ways to get it out there. You can, like I said, conferences, videos, Twitter, whatever. There's that. Then there's like your blog, your Twitter, your XYZ, but then they're still being super technical and you're still coding because you, like I said, you're putting out real world projects. So it's a really good blend, I think, for someone who wants to be in front of people, but wants to still stay on top of their technical skills, because developer advocates are usually people working on the latest and greatest. Like, you're always working on the fun stuff of what a company has to offer.
So. And who doesn't want to work on the fun stuff?
Right. Right.
But the reason I had you break it down is because, as you know, there's the tech influencer space / world. And I want to make sure that people aren't confusing that with a tech influencer, because they're two completely different things. Obviously, with the tech influencer, they don't have to have that technical piece. But when you say it like how we originally described it, I feel like the two could get convoluted or, you know, be synonymous, and it's not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like a tech influencer, like an influencer, is what they make it, right? And there's some tech, you could be a tech influencer and you're just talking about hardware and gadgets. You could be a tech influencer and you are talking about coding. You could be a tech influencer and you're talking about working in tech in a non-code role. Like, there's a tech influencer is so many things, right? So definitely understand what, like, which we're trying to get down to, for sure.
Awesome. And I want to also take the chance, because you mentioned you went from that particular role to software engineering, and then to where you are now with product management. Mm-hmm. How did you go from the tech evangelist role to software engineering?
A reorg. I couldn't even sit here and be like, oh, well, I started. No, I got reorged. But once again, you worked into a really unique software engineering role where it was almost like Microsoft consulting, but it wasn't. We were still working on the latest and greatest, but instead of conferences and XYZ, we were actually going to enterprises and working with their engineers to put them on the latest and greatest. And then if they liked what we built, we kind of passed them to Microsoft consulting.
Okay. Exactly. Yes.
So still the fun of the latest and greatest, but it became more coding every day. Then, oh, I got to put together some content, XYZ. That became less of what we were doing. And it was more like, we're doing stand-ups every day, talking about our projects, connecting with the enterprise, you know, product that we're on, the clients that we're with. So that was my, also a very special software engineering role. My everyday was very much like a software engineer of like taking my tickets, XYZ. But I, once like our project was done with that enterprise client, we moved on to the next one. And I was that team, I was still tied to like a technology, right? Like, okay, you're on this IoT project and you're on this IoT project. Sometimes I would bounce around to, there was no IoT projects in the pipeline. Like, hey, why don't you try this data on? Why don't you try, you know? So it just, it really depended on the needs. So it gave a lot of exposure to more skill sets, more tech that I can get deeper in. But yeah, it wasn't like tied to a set product again, once again.
Now I have to ask, because this happens to people a lot in the workspace, but we never talk about it. So you had to go outside of your comfort zone and you had to not only take that leap, but you had to be willing to learn like new technology and new ways of working. What motivated you to do that?
I wanted to keep my job. Let's like also pause, because I think something that hurts that motivation, when you get reorged, you're not always with the same people. You're not always, you know, on the same type of projects. You're not like, sometimes you get reorged into something totally different, right? And if you're lucky, what you get reorged into is something you're excited about. But if you're not, that can really hurt your motivation, right? So right. I think for me, what kept my motivation was I stayed with a lot of my people. I kept the same boss. I had the same team members. So it's kind of like we were, you know, going through that together. And I, in that sense, that was my community at that time. Like, even though on that team, I was the only woman. I wasn't the only Black person, but I was the only woman. My boss was a Black male, okay, you know, like that. They were on, we were such a supportive, tight-knit team that as we were going through that, the motivation, we bounced off of each other. You know, we'd be like, and we tried to all stay on the same projects, even if it was something like that had nothing to do with IoT, but another team member was on a project. It's like, well, I want to go with them because we know how we work. We know how we operate. And sometimes what people sometimes really don't value in a role, but I think it really changes the game, is the people you work with. The people you work with can really make or break a job. And so that really is what kept me motivated to like continue to get deeper, make sure I was contributing to projects, even if it wasn't in my vertical that I cared about, because I wanted to stay with my team. I wanted to keep up with my team because they were such a great team.
One, what a unique experience to get a reorg and stay with the people that you're on a team with. I don't think I've ever heard that ever happening. But two, let's talk about the people that you work with, because not everyone has an enjoyable experience, but it sounds like you had an enjoyable experience and that really affected you, not only like probably in the future, but also with this reorg. So let's talk about the importance of having good team members. So using your experience, what were some of the things that made them like, you're basically your support system when you're away from home, because you're really at work a lot, you know, a lot of hours a day.
I think it helped that my team was always willing to learn, but willing to teach each other, right? Like, yo, I just discovered this thing. Let's all sit and tinker with it till we all have a full understanding of it. Or even if we were on different projects, we would still knowledge share, right? But then outside of that, like, we just all liked each other. Like, I would hang out with my team outside of work, and that's rare for me. I hate to say it. Not even because I don't necessarily like people, but I try to have a separation between work and home and personal life. But this team, like I said, it was four of us. And the four of us, it's like we all knew like who's getting married, who's dating who, who's moving where, like all that stuff, right? Yeah. And it was, even as the team expanded, we ended up getting a fifth. It was just, they were just people who I connected with on so many different levels. And I haven't had that since. That was years ago, and I miss them sometimes. I miss them a lot. They're great. And I know I can still reach out to them and stuff like that, like never burn that bridge. But I've never had a team like that who truly has your back, who truly is like, oh, I'm not good at this, but you know who is Gabby, or Gabby needs to grow in this, so we want to help her grow. Like a team who supports you in that way, and it's all reciprocal, was a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I just had to highlight it because like you said, that is rare as hell. Like it does not happen, especially like the having your back piece. And especially in today's climate, like it is rare to find. So when you do find it, treasure it.
Yeah. And I'll say it doesn't have to be everybody on your team. Right. I feel like every job I have had, there were some people where I was like, oh, absolutely not. But I was able to at least find two people, three people that I knew had my back at all times. Preferably you want that to be your manager, but that's not always the case. I have experience with that too. But there has not been a team that I've been on where I was like, I hate everybody up in here. Like I need today. Where I'm at now, I actually love everybody I work with too. It's not the same relationship as I had on the team I was talking about previously, but I generally do enjoy working with everybody. And that is also hard to find. Like you could put me on a project with anyone and I'd be like, okay, cool. We're going to get it done.
And you know, you mentioned the manager story and you know, we love a good manager story here. So why don't we go ahead and talk about it? So there's always being a manager, first off, is hard in itself. But when you have a manager that's not supportive, like talk about the situation and how you learned what you learned from that.
Ooh, it's going to get spicy. So I've had one, two, three, four, five managers. Five managers.
Okay.
Out of the five.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them. No, okay. Out of the five, two of them were amazing managers. Like, amazing. Like, I would follow them wherever. If they were to go to another team and call me and be like, hey, do you want to work on this team? Mm-hmm. And it could have nothing to do with what I actually like. I'm going. Because that's how good of a manager they are, right?
Okay.
Then I had another two who weren't bad managers, but they weren't great. Like, you know. We checked off the box. They weren't hindering my career, but they weren't necessarily helping it either. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
Like it wasn't terrible working for them, but it was like, I need a little bit more. And then I just had one manager that was just not great. Not great at all for me. I also want to say, you know, someone else could be working under these managers and have totally different experiences, right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not good at all. And I think what made it so bad for me, and I think I was kind of set up for failure, is I didn't work directly on what he worked on.
Ooh, that's always like a setup for failure.
Yeah, I can't say he set me up for failure. You just the way the org was, you know, whatever.
Right.
My work didn't exactly fall under his view.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of things that maybe I was doing or putting time into that other people are appreciating, my manager wasn't necessarily privy to or appreciating. And I get, like you said, being a manager is hard, you know? So he is working on, like, his main focus was one of the biggest products that we had at the time. And what I was working on, not that it wasn't big and not that it wasn't important, it just wasn't his. Mm-hmm. It didn't align with his big product. And I had a counterpart. It was me and another person on the team where we both didn't really work under the same things that our manager did. And I think that was a struggle for both of us in different ways. I think my counterpart, he had been there longer. So he was able to figure out a way to use others to get feedback back to our manager in a way that worked for him and helped him. For me, it was just never found. And so I would constantly be going to my manager about, well, what do you need to see? I want a promotion and, you know, things like that. And
yeah,
I feel like he didn't have a clear answer because he really didn't know.
Ooh.
But it's like, I'm not realizing you really don't know. And I don't think he could really say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think it really set me back. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't good. And it also got to a place where the other teams that I was working with work, you know, they're telling him like, she's doing all these things. Like, we need her for this and we need her for that. And it kind of just was like, bloop. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not really, you know, as important or blah, 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 blah. So it, yeah.
How did you continue to like, even want to be in that environment? Because it's hard.
It was, but I loved what I was working on. So okay. I was when I was a software engineer and technical evangelist, my focus was IoT, but JavaScript and TypeScript.
Okay.
I loved all of it. So when I transitioned into being a product manager, I transitioned to Visual Studio team at Microsoft, and I worked on JavaScript and TypeScript tooling, which was so cool because I'm my own customer. Like, I use these tools XYZ. So I felt really connected to what I was working on, and I was super excited about it. And so I think what kept me going was the teams I'm working with were also excited for it. Like, no one's thought about this, or we haven't executed on it. Like, my engineers loved my ideas. The cross team product managers and engineers love my ideas. But I think it just got to a point of like, I'm at a standstill. Mm-hmm. And even though I am performing, where is this really getting me right now? And at some point, you kind of have to sit and really be like, what is the right choice here? Do I change for progression, or do I stay here knowing that progression is going to be a lot harder or longer? And then my biggest tip, because this is something that I was I guess hurt myself in doing this, is just because you perceive your manager as a good person does not mean that your manager is a good boss for you. I would constantly be trying to work with my manager because I'm like, oh, well, he's great at this and he's great at that. But he wasn't great at managing me. That's just what it was. Like,
yeah,
it didn't work well. So.
And then also, was like a situation of forcing something, right?
Yeah.
And when you have to force something, it's like forcing a square into a circle. It just does not work out. And you got to figure out an avenue that's best for you instead of waiting or just like getting in your, like sticking in your comfort zone. But you use that experience to then go get into product management. So how did that transition go? What was your catalyst?
My first job was at Microsoft as a product manager with my bad boss. That's rude, but the not so great experience. Mm-hmm. But that transition happened because when we reorged into software engineering, mm-hmm. my manager that I loved so much left. And I was like, I kind of just knew like this is the beginning of the end for me. And that started to make me feel really unmotivated. But also I was realizing that I loved the projects that we were working on because I thought they were really cool. They're innovative. But like, I wanted the bigger picture. Like, what is the end goal? Who is determining what we're delivering? Like, as a software engineer, I'm kind of just being told you got to build this, you got to build that. But I wanted to be in the room when we're planning, like, this is the deliverable. This is our MVP, you know, X, Y, Z. And the role of product manager was so new. So my team actually didn't have one.
Okay.
But my mentors who I'd gotten over time at Microsoft, you know, they're trying to help me find other jobs, you know, to find a manager that would, because the manager I had after my good manager left was one of the ones that was just like, he was just there. He wasn't bad. There was nothing wrong with him. You know, whatever. It's just like, I'm not going anywhere here. Like, this is standstill at this point. And yeah, I realized that all of my mentors, whom I met through being a technical evangelist, because they'd be at these conferences, they'd be showing off Microsoft technology. They were not technical evangelists. They were product managers, but they were so technical that I thought they were also software engineers. And so when they started breaking down what they do and how they make the vision, like, and then, you know, they sell it to our engineering teams, and our engineering teams will execute. And that's how we build product at Microsoft. I said, that's where I want to be the person with the ideas.
Mm.
And that was my catalyst to actually switch, trying to find a new manager, which ultimately didn't lead me to I went from one manager that wasn't great to another manager that wasn't great. But the experience of what I learned is like, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is like, this is it. So yeah. And I think it just fueled my fire once I realized like, okay, maybe staying at Microsoft isn't helping me to be a product manager and something just more fun and exciting. Like, developer tools was exciting for me, but it's mm-hmm. not exciting for the world. I want people to be like, oh my God, you work on what? Like, that's so cool. Nobody really, unless you're in tech, you don't know what Visual Studio is. Like,
I never thought of that. Because I guess because I'm in tech, so I was like, okay, yeah, Visual Studio. Okay, cool. But Yeah, no one would know that. Like
you're not going to know what that is. And
yeah,
two, something that I learned was I was so passionate about that project because it aligned with my interests. And I was like, well, you have other interests outside of tech. Find those, work on that.
Yeah.
When you're working on something that excites you, like a lot of times it won't feel like work. And to be honest, I'm not like a big basketball fan working at the NBA. Like, I'm not like, oh my goodness, I know all the stats. I don't. That's not me. But I like the experience of basketball. I like watching the games. I like the excitement, the fan excitement, X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
So before we hop into the amazing stuff that you're doing for NBA, I do want to talk through the transition a little bit, because one thing that people sometimes don't elaborate on is how they actually made the transition, the transferable skills, making your old jobs that you had or your old roles kind of talk to where you want to go in the future. So was that an easy thing for you to do? Or do you think it was a little bit just like happenstance because you also had a support system at the time?
I think it was both.
Okay.
Now, I think the skills are transferable. Like I said, the developer advocate part or technical evangelist part, right? Like, you learn all these social skills, which really help as a product manager, which I mentioned before, because you're talking to different kinds of people. And I felt like that in itself, whatever. But a lot of product managers, especially at Microsoft, it was really big that you also go to conferences and you talk about the features you are releasing. It is you, not the developer advocates. It is you going out and doing those things. So that was also something that really just transferred, right? I think something I had that a lot of product managers don't have out the gate, you kind of learn this, is the technical skills to understand, to speak my engineer's language. So as I'm telling my engineers, this is what we have to build, I can also speak on our technology stack. Why what we have now that might be a challenge. Like, I could look at the code and be like, hey, this is going to be harder to implement, even though the product sounds simple, because our architecture is built like this. And that's something that a lot of PMs don't always have, or a lot of companies don't appreciate. At Microsoft, it's a full-on technical company. So the more technical you were as a product manager, the better it was, right? And a lot of people would hop between software engineering, product management, software engineering. Like, that was very common because, yeah, especially in the org I was in, that was very common because PM would get so technical, right? But what I would be more senior level, mid-level, senior levels. But I would notice from the people coming out of college was like, they didn't always understand what they were proposing or what they were working on. So like, my team that I was getting to know as a product manager at Microsoft, I think like we wanted to put together a demo to kind of show our boss like what we think we should be working on. Mm-hmm. And it was something as simple as like write some code, run the debugger, you know, set a breakpoint, something like that. And they didn't know how to do it. And I was just like, oh, you just boom, 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 boom. Which that's not to me, not super technical. But that's something that they never had to. They came out of college. They didn't have to code. They didn't have to do that. They had to just learn more about the requirements and blah, 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 blah. Like, so literally they were like so amazed at how well I knew how to use Visual Studio. And I'm like, don't we all? Don't, you know what I'm saying? So it definitely, I think, gave me a leg up. And my engineer at Microsoft would tell me they appreciated it all the time, because they were like, sometimes we talk to product managers and they don't know what we're talking about. And they were like, we can just talk to you and you understand why we're blocked. You understand how we can move forward. You understand why this might take longer than they think it will, because you can speak our language. And I think that's something that has helped me even as a product manager today. The only difference is, depending on your company, the company I'm at now, I don't get to be as close to the code. And sometimes I miss that. I do miss that.
Yeah. And actually, that's a great transition. Let's talk about the company that you're at now. So currently working at the NBA, product manager, what is your day-to-day looking like these days?
We're getting ready for playoffs. That's starting next week. And my day-to-day really right now is just feature testing, because we started doing playoff stuff right after All-Star ended. Like, we're hopping into it. All-Star was back in February. So now it's kind of like, oh, feature testing, make sure everything is smooth. If we're finding anything at risk, documenting it, but also preparing for the next thing. If you keep up with the NBA, you know, right after playoffs, we go into the draft. So we're already having initial discussions as playoffs is rolling out and we're making sure everything is seamless and working well. I am now also cutting tickets for the draft, testing our old components to figure out what can we upgrade XYZ, figuring out if any of our stakeholders need any updates or changes, so pulling requirements, XYZ, working with our design team to kind of get like our initial designs and prototypes up. So every day is different.
It's like a lot though. I think we underestimate how much really is going on behind the scenes, because obviously I think most people, if you follow NBA, if you follow basketball, know, like you mentioned, All-Star, and then you're already working for the playoffs, but you're already thinking past that to the draft. Like my mind hasn't even gone there yet. I'm like, okay, let's go through the playoffs. So you always have to be basically one step ahead.
Yeah. Like as the product owner, so I own the big events digitally. So I own All-Star, I own playoffs, I own the draft and stuff like that. Like, and what that looks like digitally, it is my job to know everything that's put out, even across other teams that maybe I'm not working on a feature directly, but have an idea of like, this is what the experience is going to look like. And it's a lot of fun. It is stressful though, because this is when we get the most eyes. So these big events is when we get a lot of eyes on our products, right? Mm-hmm. And so you just want to make sure that everything is seamless. And it's like, you know, basketball doesn't stop. Basketball, the NBA, if I don't deliver, it's not going to be like, oh, it's okay, we'll push this game back or we'll push this event back so you can push out stuff. It's like, no, this is the day. You need to be prepared. So right. That's why it's kind of like we have to think so far ahead with the draft and stuff like that, because we need ample time to make sure we are or truly prepared for the event for our users, our digital users.
I just can't imagine like having that all on my shoulders. And then, you know, okay, first off, there's a lot of teams. So it's like, how many other cross-functional teams are you communicating with to make sure everything goes off, like off without a hitch?
Yeah, I do cross-team collaboration like every day, all day, every hour. I am talking to somebody else. I've never had this much cross-team collaboration in my life, because at this company, you know, like you said, there's so many moving parts. And because we're also in a consumer application versus at Microsoft, I was at a business application, right? Mm-hmm. We're at a consumer application where it's like almost every major feature that people may not even think about, somebody has to own that. Because if a consumer is demanding it, we got to get it out now. Yeah. So we can have it where I'm working on this and it's like, well, you got to drop this and now work on that. No, we all got to be working full speed at all times, because NBA don't, like, it doesn't stop. I mean, it's off season, right? But when the season is up, we are all up. We got to move. So it's a lot of fun. It can be a little intense at times, because just like any consumer application, TikTok, Instagram, you know, stuff like that, like people will tear you apart if your application does not work.
Like immediately too. There's no, like, there's not even a delay. Like they are going to tell you your stuff ain't working.
You are under a different kind of lens than like a team who works on Google Docs or Microsoft Word. Like no one's banging down their door like, oh my God, you didn't put this shortcut in. Like that's not happening, you know? So it's definitely more intense than Microsoft because of the product that I'm on, which once again, love it. It's very exciting.
But, and also just real quick, because you mentioned like you have an off season, but you even have like summer league. So do you really have an off season?
I'll say yes and no, because, you know, you can kind of plan things out where I try to, everything I build is reusable. So there are some things that'll only apply to certain events, right? Like playoffs has a bracket. All-Star don't need a bracket, right? But there are other features that reusability makes my life so much easier. And so Summer League for me is that digital experience that it's like, A, we're going to try and test new things that maybe aren't out there, but B, for the solid experience, that's reusability right there.
Got it. And so you touched a little bit on some features, but what features can you tell the listeners are ones that, so when we see it, we're like, oh, Gabby worked on that.
Once again, if you see a bracket, it wasn't all me. I can't say that. I can't say it was all me because we're all together and there's always a bracket every year, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're going through that playoff experience, I think a feature I would love to highlight, which has been a feature for a long time, but people like don't realize, I guess it exists. If you open up your bracket and click on a matchup, like click on a round.
Yeah.
This is on your app. This is on your desktop, mobile, whatever, mobile web, whatever. And you click on it, it opens what is called a series hub. Playoffs is all about series, right? And like, mm-hmm. anywhere from 4 to 7 games. And we, for every single series, is an area just about that series. So if you really want to follow like your favorite teams and what's happening and what is the game schedule for this particular series, what are the stats for this particular series, like it's there. And it infuriates me because people, like I've heard feedback, like, how can I just keep up with this one? And I'm like, it's there. go click on the bracket. Go click something.
I built it and you better like, go.
I'm telling you it's there. And it was actually a feature that was there before I started, but something that we have worked to enhance, something we have worked to drive users to over time. More as I've been, and I'm it's one of the things I'm really proud of because I think our bracket is so cool, and I think we have the data, we have the content, and it's just waiting for you to find. Just find it.
Fair. So now we know. Anytime there's a bracket, that's all you and your team. Well, and your team. Mm-hmm. But also have to touch on. So you know when we talk about tech jobs, and we say work in a fast-paced environment, this sounds like the ultimate fast-paced environment. So I want to know, what have you learned by working in this type of environment?
Ooh, I've definitely learned my time management skills mm-hmm. have definitely increased over time. And also my turnaround time, because things can be very, like I need to have it now sometimes. Sometimes you need to have it today, right now. But if you don't have it, you need to have a backup plan. You need a plan A, B, C. Like the planning is through the roof, because at the end of the day, I have to look at leadership. I have to look at my boss and say, this is what we wanted. This is what we're actually going to do, even though it may not be all we wanted. But this is the experience, because I think working at a business application like Visual Studio, mm-hmm. it's not that the consumer wasn't number one, but, you know, if we have cool features that consumers are asking for, like I said, those could roll out in time. But when you're doing something that needs to be parallel to real life immediately, the consumer is always number one. So you need to plan effectively to make sure that consumer experience, whether it's plan A, B, and C better all be great experiences. Even if you can't get out A, but you got out C, it's still a great experience. So I definitely have had to learn putting myself in the consumer shoes, but in order to keep up with the consumer, good time management, good turnaround time, and prioritization for sure.
Mm. Yeah, that's a big one, especially as a product manager. But you know what, Gabby, we were talking about this the whole time. I don't think I asked you, how did you even get this role?
My network. I knew somebody who knew somebody, and they turned in my resume and I got an interview and they liked me.
Listen, you love to see it. So that's why networking and having community is important.
It's very important. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I think something that people do, which I don't think is always helpful though, is if you work in finance, don't ask somebody in marketing for a role. Or ask somebody for a recommendation. I personally don't think that always is the best approach. Because if I work in finance or I work in tech and someone who is in a whole different department is like, I think this person would be good for you. It's like, you don't even necessarily know the skill sets that I have. It's not that it's not going to work. I think though, sometimes coming from someone else, coming from another product manager, another engineer or something like that, like it's going to weigh more because you know exactly what I'm looking for.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And they have like, sometimes you just need a little connection to it.
Yep.
To have that make sense. So yeah, that's definitely agree with that advice. And Gabby, we've talked about your experience, your amazing role at the MBA now being a product manager. But to end today's conversation, I have to make sure that you mention also No Way She Codes. So tell my listeners what that is and also where they can find more information about that.
You know, this is going to be funny. I don't know what it is anymore.
I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, I get it because things evolve. Like
so much. Yeah. So I think when I started No Way She Codes, I really wanted to be the all-around nerdy tech person. And I really just wanted to talk about learning how to code, what resources to use, what cool thing I did today, what projects I built, XYZ. And then I got bored because that's not the only thing that I am.
Yeah.
And I also felt like the audience I was attracting wasn't resonating with me. I really like want my audience to be women.
Okay.
Black women, women of color. Because once again, we're going to talk about experiences that you're more aligned with. Not that women of other races won't. So I would love for them to still be in tune. But I realized with women, like we are such multi-dimensional creatures.
Mm-hmm.
That I can appeal my concepts that I'm learning in tech to other things. So No Way She Codes still is technical. She's still a technical girly, but she's also a technical girly who wants to sometimes share her makeup routine. Yeah. Or she's a technical curly who just today wants to talk about a generic corporate work topic. Like I just posted a video about just knowing how you have a good boss. That's not tech aligned. That is corporate girly aligned. I don't want No Way She Codes to be just, oh, I'm on social media because I think I'm pretty. That's not.
Yeah.
But I do want to have my moments. Like, I look good today, y'all. Like,
yeah. You know?
So she's turning in. I'm trying to turn her or my platform into just a multi-dimensional, multi-hyphenate woman who just happens to like to talk about tech sometimes. I don't like saying like, I'm going to help you break into tech because I don't have all the answers.
Right. There's no handbook for it. If it was a handbook, then we would all be recommending you go read it and have everybody stop asking us, how do we get in the tech?
Exactly. But I do want to be the person that when a topic is asked, you know, like, oh, she's about to tell us for real, like her experiences. But my experience isn't the only way. And so I try in my videos to also preface that with, you know, just because it happened this way, it might happen a little differently for you, but you might be able to, you know, pull something from this. So.
Right.
Energy Codes is still figuring it out. I think about changing my name all the time. And people are like, no, like, you can't do that. I'm like, okay.
Well, why not, though?
I kind of get it because, you know, the name came from when I tell people that, like, oh, what do you do? I'm a software engineer. No way. Like, that was always the reaction.
Yeah.
And I feel like even when I am talking about girly stuff, like, people still know me as No Way She Codes. So to rebrand and then change a name might be a little harder than I want it to be. So
fair. But I definitely align with, like, we are not a monolith. Like, we are not one thing. We are multifaceted. We have multi-hyphenate, you know, hyphenation in regards to what we do. And so it's like, evolving is not a bad thing. But also I understand, like, the whole concept of social, building a brand, you know, et cetera, making that change is a little bit harder these days than just to say, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore and I'm going to be the XYZ. But you give really great advice on there. So to end today's episode, I want you to tell the listeners the best piece of advice you ever received.
It's okay to fail.
Ooh, okay.
That is the best advice I've ever gotten. I don't think everybody's environment always makes them feel that way. I don't feel like I've been in some environments. And I actually got that from Microsoft. Like, my first job ever was like we want you to fail so you can get up and do better the next time. Like, that was something that was heavily taught on my first team. And I think I've taken that into every team. I don't think it translates well for other people. You know, sometimes you're on a team, they'd be like, well, you failed. So like, why, you know, like you're kind of reprimanded a little bit more, but mm-hmm. to be honest, like you will never grow without failure. It's impossible. You're never going to know what you don't know, where you need to do better without failure. And some are going to be bigger than others. But at the end of the day, also, it's just a job. Fail. Like, seriously, like, it really is. Like, the failure isn't the end of the world. Take it. Sit. You could sit in it. Maybe I'll give you a day. I think a day is kind of long, but whatever. I'm trying to be nice. So you could sit in it for a day, but the next day you need to wake up and say, this is how I'm not going to do that again.
Right. That's such great advice. And I think we hear it, like, we hear it and we say, okay, but we need to really start implementing that. Because, like you said, you can't learn anything without failing.
Yeah. And I think it's Black people especially, we feel like we have no room for failure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We already feel like we have to work 10 times harder to have the same opportunities. So we don't always give ourselves the grace of not being perfect. And even though this mantra was given to me by a versatile team, I think it helps our people a lot more because there's usually no room for that. So.
Yes. And I think that's a wonderful note to end on. Gabby, where can listeners connect with you offline? So off of the episode, social media, all that good stuff.
On all my platforms, I am at No Way She Codes, one word. I'm mainly on Instagram. I tend to go through my requests often. So if you have a question, you know, you can send me a DM. But if you want something immediately, just ask in a comment because I don't have to look at requests for that. I'm working on my TikTok brand, so you can find me there too. Same thing, No Way She Codes. If you find me on Twitter, you can add me, but I'm never there. So...
And you don't have to worry about searching long for it because I will put all of this in the show notes so you can connect directly with Gabby. So Gabby, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it. Appreciate you taking my listeners through your journey and sharing more advice, especially for women who are in tech.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to Black Tech Unplugged. I'm Dina McKay, and you can find the show on all social media platforms under Black Tech Unplugged. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to this episode. And if you have a few extra minutes, make sure to leave a 5-star review too. It will help me out a lot and help other people find the podcast. Until next time.